Welcome back, everybody, to the second hour of the Halloween Marathon. This is Larry, and with our panel, hopefully we still have the panel here of Guy and Paul. Yes, I see.
Yeah, I'm Guy here.
Okay, well, we're going to finish the question that Robin had posed. And the question, as I recall it, Robin, was how can we position ourselves better for next year? Because they're not going to stop this stuff until they're stopped. So is that your question, Robin?
Yeah, that is my question. How could we actually, what kind of a plan could we put in place where we were prepared to respond in this very small, narrow time? And I'm curious of Paul's thoughts, or Guy's, or anybody else's. It may not be doable.
Well, I don't see that we have to wait until they start tacking the signs up. I think that if we believe we have a viable cause of action, we can file our cause of action, particularly when we take our affidavits from people in terms of how they were harmed and what hardships they were. I believe that we could file a lawsuit and they could announce that they're not going to do this again as a part of the settlement. But I don't think we have to wait until we're in this position again. We kind of knew this was coming because they've been getting worse and worse every year. But let's see what Paul and Guy have.
I think Paul just dropped actually. Guy may still be here. I see him there.
Guy, you still here?
Yeah, I'm still here. But you know, I think that, you know, sort of what's been, you know, what I sort of echo, you know, what Robin was saying, and that it may be, you know, I mean, it's certainly an uphill battle, but it's certainly one that's worth, you know, that's worth fighting. But I don't think I have anything, you know, worthwhile to add. I'm not sure if Paul does, if he's still here or not.
Well, I believe that if there was a statute that they were enforcing, you would certainly have the statute. In Georgia, there is no statute. This is a self-invented thing. So you would have to seek injunctive relief against an overzealous sheriff.
Hi, I was having trouble with my microphone, but can people hear me?
We can hear you great.
So, you know, in broad strokes, these are all examples of something that I've seen popping up around the country, not just on this call, but North Carolina, various jurisdictions. And the question is, you know, sheriffs and other law enforcement personnel who seem to be exceeding their statutory authority, placing restraints on liberty that are not authorized by statute, or are perhaps arguably authorized by statute, but depend on a fairly broad reading of some fairly thin statutory text. And I apologize if I missed a little of the conversation while I was trying to resolve microphone and headphone issues, but that's absolutely right. I mean, constitutionally, what this is a due process issue, right? You have a representative of the state or the municipality, as the case may be, depending on how it's set up, who is taking away the liberty rights or liberty or impairing the liberty interests of citizens without proper authority, right? It's simply untrue, as a caller mentioned, that sheriffs can do what they want. No, they can't. Sheriffs have a relatively defined set of statutory authorities that allow them to do certain things, but very specifically, they do not have the right to impair one's liberty interests without the authority to do so. That's sort of the basis of the Fourth Amendment, for instance. So in answer to Robin's question, I think this has become more of an issue. And there are some clear things that could be done to sort of position ourselves to address this more rapidly in the future. As someone mentioned, this is a prime case, and the law very specifically allows you to go in seeking declaratory and injunctive relief, which is just the legal terms for saying, you know, the sheriff has announced an intent to do this. We believe that this exceeds the statutorily defined authority of the sheriff or other law enforcement or state actor. And we're asking a court to declare or make a judgment about whether or not that's true. And very specifically, when it comes to these sort of constitutional interests, you don't have to wait for it to happen to then turn around and sue. You can go to court and say, the state has said this will happen, and we're asking you to declare whether or not it's constitutional before it comes to pass. Because if we have to wait until it happens, then someone's constitutional rights can be infringed without effective remedy. Frankly speaking, the strategic value of that is, one, I think you're likely to win in many of these cases. I have seen more and more cases where sheriffs appear to be effectively making stuff up in terms of what they want to do with registrants. And two, the town and county has to spend money to defend it. It's certainly a plausible case. It's certainly a case that's not going to be simply tossed by the court if it's properly drawn. And that creates a fairly powerful leverage point where you can force a state or city or, you know, any entity to ask itself, you know, is this really worth fighting about? Because these people are going to take us to court. We're going to have to spend money to defend it. And if they win, we're not only going to have to not do it, but we're then going to have to turn around and pay their attorneys for pointing out that we're acting unconstitutionally. So, you know, as we look forward, I would suggest looking at, you know, a system that we go ahead and do the legal work of defining the complaint. Because one complaint that essentially says the sheriff is exceeding their statutory authority and this is a violation of due process could be modified fairly easily to cover a wide range of situations, which would allow us then to react fairly rapidly if someone reported that a sheriff had announced an intention to do something. We could go pretty directly to court, and in appropriate circumstances, probably go to court very quickly, seeking a preliminary injunction or injunctive relief in these situations where over the holidays, these restrictions sort of pop up, and on a normal legal timeline, they would have been sort of over and done with before you could react to them. So I do think it's a valid avenue, and I think there is actually some architecture we could put in place that would better position everyone to bring these challenges and put this before a court. And I think in broad strokes, that's likely to be fairly productive over the short and the long term.
Well, Paul, what you mentioned, it's appealing to us, is that you said two things we're likely to win, and you talked about attorney fees. And since we're so strapped for money to do the hundreds of litigation action, causes of action that need to be undertaken, the fact that we have something that I think we can win. We had a snarky comment on the website. Well, why are you people putting so much energy on this when we've got IML? Well, it's real simple. We can't win IML. I think we can win this. And another reason is that this affects every family in this jurisdiction. Every registrant in Spalding County is having their life disrupted and possibly their family placed in jeopardy by these flyers. Every family in Butts County that's on the registry tonight is having their family placed in jeopardy and their livelihood disrupted by the signage that they're putting in their yards. I think we can possibly win this, and then we get to recover our cost. That's what makes this appealing to us. Plus, it is something they shouldn't be doing, and they're not going to be able to stop on their own volition. You should have seen the Spalding County Sheriff and the glee in his eye when he was sitting there telling how enjoyable this was. It's like these people are nuts. So that's appealing to me, Paul, that you see that we may have something that we can gain traction with, and we can do it with kind of a cookie cutter and try to ramp up with a preformed complaint that we can file in advance of Halloween in these most egregious instances.
Right. And unfortunately, I do need to sign off here because I had a pre-scheduled appointment I need to get to. But I did want to stay on and respond that I do think that's a productive avenue. And I think that's something that as an organization, we could do that could substantially help with these issues going forward.
Great. Well, thanks.
Paul, we are always glad to have any time that you can share and spare with us. And thanks for coming on.
Okay. Well, thank you all very much. And everyone have a safe Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
All righty. And Guy, you're going to be here with us a little bit longer, right? Or did we lose Guy at the same
time? No, he's here. He's probably just muted.
So, well, what we're going to do, and I forgot to do it at the beginning of the program. That's what happens when you get old. I was going to ask if there are any attorneys. We have volunteer attorneys around the country that are on guard, on call for us. If any of you guys are out there want to tell us what's going on, you can press *6 and we'll put you on. So that's volunteer attorneys, or it just anybody who has a report that they want to give. And we're going to roll forward in the second hour of the marathon. So there was a call in the queue. It has now, oh no, it has not vanished. Let's see. Here it is. This will be from the New England region of the United States. What's going on by the harbor?
Well, the Red Sox are world champions.
Red Sox.
And what's going on by the
Did anybody not know that?
What's going on at Martha's Vineyard?
Martha's Vineyard? I don't know what's going on at Martha's, but I can tell you it's probably warmer there than it is here. So hello there, you know.
Go ahead.
This is Richard. Yeah. I was fascinated a little bit in terms of what Barbara had to say, and hello to Barbara. The question, though, is Barbara or anybody giving advice to the persons, the families affected, as to what to do with those signs? My initial response is to do what everybody else would want to do, is go pull that sign up and see what happens. But I'm sure that the sheriff is very willing to arrest somebody.
We don't think that they could arrest anybody because there's no legal authority. But here's what they would do: the sheriff, being that they draw these statutes, and you live in a part of the country where, even though you're not on the registry, where they're a lot more lenient. But they draw these statutes in the southern United States with such teeth and such precision that they have a lot of "I got you's." And what they would do is they would put that person on a pegboard to get an "I got you" moment. And for instance, if you have to be in on 90 days, on the 91st day, they would have their stopwatch and they would be looking to violate you, or they would be making sure that you that they could try to find you on a social media platform that you didn't report your identifier. They would play an "I got you" game with. So we didn't feel comfortable telling anyone not to cooperate with the signs, because we're not in a position to help them when the sheriff does the "I got you" game that they're inevitably going to do.
Supposing, though, however, Richard does, and of course we could not encourage this organizationally, and we will not, but supposing somebody were to respond in the way that Richard describes and was arrested or charged with whatever they could come up with, and as you say, Larry, that would be a difficult challenge for a sheriff, having absolutely no statutory support for this. But still, let's just assume that they were able to turn it into a criminal charge. That would at least provide a platform to challenge it, wouldn't it?
It would. And what they would charge them with, I would just about, at first blush, I think what they would do is they would charge them with destruction of public property. In the case of the signs, they would say that these signs were printed at county expense and you destroyed these. The pole that we put them on, and I was hoping I'd get a picture of one on a pole in the Butts County situation, but they would charge them with some frivolous offense like that. But then that would be fun to defend, because you had no business to put a pole in my yard with county property on it.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Guy. Sorry, I accidentally disconnected. I just hit the wrong button. But I'm still here, and I'm here for about another 10 or 15 minutes or so.
Okay, thanks, Guy. We appreciate all the time you can give us. But yeah, Robin, I think that they would. There's the contempt of cop. There's all these sorts of things. What they would do is they would go get belligerent at the door with the person and say you couldn't do that. And then the person would respond in a way that they would consider that a contemptible action. And they would say, "You're being what do they call that? That's typically when you're obstructing an officer." It would be a charge that they would. But they would come up with some cockamamie thing to arrest the person for, and then in many states you can't be released easily if you're on the registry, because you have to see a judge. You know, the jail releasing officials can't release that segment of the arrestees because of these special. So we didn't feel comfortable giving people such advice. But if anyone had told me I'm inclined to do that, I would not have tried to have dissuaded them from doing it. I would have just said there's potential downside and you need to make sure you think about this. But if having thought about it, and if you want to do it, go for it, and we'll help you to the extent we can.
Exactly. And but if you are on the call now and you're in Georgia, you did not hear that from us.
And if you're in Georgia and you have taken the sign down, please let us know and make a picture of that sign. So
did I open a can of worms by any chance?
No, never. Not you, Richard.
Oh, good. I feel better.
So, yes, Richard, you did, but I think it's a good can of worms. It's a very good can of worms because we didn't feel comfortable. We thought about it, but we didn't feel comfortable giving advice. But if someone does that, they're going to have a very weak charge criminally, because there's nothing on the books that would support them in this. So you're going to have to do something contemptible that they can file a BS charge against you, and they would probably do that. So, all right. Well, thanks, Richard, and we'll get back to you for future reports. You can come back as you need to.
Okay.
All right. I'm gonna go back to we're looking for our communications director. She's supposed to be hitting *6, so we can get her in here. Sandy, you texted me, said you want to get on. I can't see you. There's too many people here. So *6.
I don't see her.
Yeah, *6. She's going to be a 713, but *6 will bring her up right away.
Oh, you're watching that board. She's not coming in this way. Okay.
Okay. Well, then how am I going to bring her on if she didn't call? I told her to call.
Oh, I just don't see that board. I'm not seeing the board you're seeing. So.
Yeah. So yeah, if a person's not in the queue, I can't see you. Anybody who has a report, *6, will get you in the queue. And I'm going to go back to our Georgia lawyer. Barbara, did you have anything to add on my pontification about why we didn't advise anybody?
Well, I just wanted to say that probation officers in Georgia seem to have more authority than judges. You know, a judge can issue an order saying something, and the probation officer, it's like, well, you know, I have the right to revoke the individual. I don't care what the judge says. And it's a problem, and I don't know exactly how we deal with it. I've spoken to the director of supervision who, you know, refers me to somebody else, somebody else, somebody else. And there doesn't seem to be any accountability, but they routinely will find a reason to revoke somebody for next to nothing, just because. So you are absolutely right about anybody that chose to tear up the signs or take them down. That probation officer, if he or she is in a mood to do so, will find some other reason to revoke them and send them to jail just to show them that they can. And it's a sad situation.
So thanks again, Barbara. We're running out of time with Guy. So Guy, did you have anything else observation-wise before we devour your remaining moments?
I just think that I guess this is more of a broader point, but I mean, it's just really fascinating to me how every Halloween, you know, this becomes such a focus of the public and media imagination. And I guess that also bleeds down to law enforcement imagination, that, you know, we're going to be devoting all these public safety resources and spending them in a way that is not going to have any sort of benefit for public safety. It's just kind of, it's fascinating to me, I guess, from a, you know, I guess you'd call it a sociological standpoint. It's almost like the, you know, the old Halloween sadism, you know, sort of urban legend that, you know, parents are warned to check their kids' bags for razor blades, even though that's like, it's never, ever happened. But people are still afraid of it every year. And it's kind of, you know, that's exactly what's going on with a lot of these actions that are being undertaken by probation and parole officers and also, you know, sheriff's offices and requiring people to put signs up. It's essentially trying to fix a problem that's never been a problem. But every Halloween, like clockwork, you can set your watch by it. And it's just, it's fascinating to me. And I'm not, I guess that's just more of a general observation than it is anything, as to what to do about it. I mean, I think that the going into courts is certainly going to be, like Paul was saying earlier, at least I think it may have been Paul or it may have been Robin, to get injunctive relief against law enforcement officials who are doing this sort of thing. But I think we also need to find ways to engage more with the media and find ways to be able to get a different sort of narrative into the public's imagination, that kind of reframes the issue as being one of, perhaps this is really a misuse and a waste of these valuable public safety resources when we could be better spending them in other ways. I'm certainly very appreciative for, you all being on top of it. And if anyone has any, if anyone has any questions for me before I go, I'll be happy to try to, answer them to the very best of my ability.
So, all right. I'll see if I've got anybody in the queue. Producer's telling me I put the wrong phone number. I did not. I have seven. It's supposed to be 747, not 727. Andy?
Yes, it's 747.
Okay. Well, then what we need to do is to stop everything here because people are texting to the wrong number. Please give the correct number. If you have entered after you signed up and you got the email with the telephone number, I thought we read it aloud yesterday when I was writing that up, but apparently we had a typo. So let's get the correct phone number. And everybody who's texted this morning when we sent the announcement out with the number finally, if you texted, you need to retext because we don't have your entry. What is the correct number?
The right number is 747-227-4477. The email message said 727, the first three digits, so it's 747 instead of 727.
Everybody, please retext your number. Yes. Because anybody who texted to 747, I mean to 727, it went astray, and people are wondering why we're texting them.
Probably.
We'll give that number multiple times to make sure that everybody who's listening can text. And you just text PRIZE to 2747, like the aeroplane, 227-4477.
Correct.
All right. Tell you, we got some old seniors around this place. So thank you for being with us on this special edition, guy.
Yeah, if thanks, Larry.
If you have the opportunity, I'll tell you that he got good reviews at the speaking engagement in Texas at the Texas Voices Conference. He has he's under consideration to be at our conference, and the committee is working through our selection process. There's a good chance you'll have the opportunity to see Guy and hear from Guy at Houston. In June.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to it, and I guess I will talk to you all later. Have a good evening and a safe Halloween, everyone.
Thank you, Guy. Happy all right. Halloween.
All right, happy Halloween. Bye.
All right. So, are any texts coming finally?
Yes. Now I'm getting overwhelmed with them.
well, since I told everybody at the beginning of the program they're going to be in the later part of the evening, that gives everybody a chance to get their entry into, and also.
So we were texting to the wrong number.
Yes, and that's.
Well,
that's,
I hope it was the sheriff of. What's that county? Butts County.
Probably not with that area code. I don't believe it would have been. So most of those would be 706 or 678 or 770. So, all right. Well, let's see what we can get going here on the people in the queue. there's quite a few of them, and I see all of you, and I'm going to try to figure out some method here. We've got our communications director, Sandy, in the queue, and we've got a report from the state of Illinois, and we've got an attorney from Connecticut. And the attorney from Connecticut, it might be a little bit better if we hold off on you, because you don't have a Halloween report per se, but I see you here. All right, so we're going to go to our communications to Sandy. Sandy, welcome to NARSL in Action. We have been very busy with press releases and fielding media calls. Can you briefly summarize what the effect of our press releases have been on this about this Halloween program and how we've been overwhelmed?
Hi, Larry. Thank you. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
All right, good. The effect has been overwhelming. That's the only word. Yesterday was very overwhelming. Today, moderately so. We have had many, many, many interviews. Robin's done some. I've done some. Brenda's done some. At this point, almost everything that's been done is posted on our website, either under most of it is under videos, because much of it is video. There are some articles that are under current events, things happening right now. And then Robin has a radio interview that's under that particular category. I wanted to comment especially in regard to what Guy said a moment ago, and I know he's gone now, but he spoke to the need of getting out the message of the resources being wasted. And that is one of the main points that I think every one of us have hit on every program we've been on, every interview we've given, is what a waste of resources it is. And I'm keeping lists of the actions that different law enforcement agencies are taking around the country, and putting it all together, and it's phenomenal what they're doing. How many men they're devoting to just going out and riding around and being sure that everyone on the registry is doing what he's supposed to be doing. And knowing what a waste it is, it's heartbreaking.
And when you say a waste, because where would you think the best deployment of resources would be? When we're talking about, they don't send these guys out to check with in single, they send about two and three and sometimes even more officers to go to each registrant's door. So where would you like to see this manpower deployed to make the community safer?
Well, the only thing that makes sense, given that it's Halloween and that the only risk for children that is increased on Halloween is that of being hurt in a traffic accident, being hit by an automobile, the only thing that makes sense to me is putting them on traffic patrol in neighborhoods where there are many children, high traffic areas, high trick-or-treat areas. And every year, some of the injuries are a result of drivers driving while they are intoxicated. I would think that driving checkpoints, pull them over and check them in those areas, that could possibly, at least it has a chance of saving a life. It's putting the resources where the risk is, and that's what I would like to see.
So, well, you've done hours and hours of research about looking for a true event that was related to Halloween at a registrant. Have you unearthed anything? And all the
no, sir. There's nothing. Going back as far as we can go, which for it to correlate to what makes sense within the context, it would be going back as far as the registry has been as it is. There's nothing, and I have found nothing, and I have found in my research an article by Diane Diamond where she wrote that very same thing. I believe it was in 2012. She made the exact comment that I make constantly, that as far as she has been able to determine, there has never been an incident of a child during any Halloween activity being accosted, injured, abducted, or in any way bothered by a person who was on a sex offender registry.
Well, it would be kind of like voting on election day in the schools. No one has ever been able to point out to
anybody.
And they're furiously trying to pass laws so that people who have a duty to register can't go to the polling place if it happens to be in a school. But yet the schools are highly monitored. There's cameras everywhere. There are people everywhere, adults everywhere. And the absurdity of that, that something's going to happen in a school on election day.
Exactly. So, that is a very, very good parallel. It is a non-issue. It's something that doesn't exist as a risk or a problem, and they're spending a fortune addressing it as though it were the most serious problem that there is.
Well, I thought that small government people believed in only responding if there was a problem. If there could be documentation, but I thought it was all about keeping government limited until there was tangible evidence that government intervention was needed. How is it that there's so much willingness to do this type of stuff when there's scant, if any, evidence to justify any of this?
It makes good press. It makes good headlines. And to be honest, the people in the community support it. The responses from the public is generally favorable. I will say that in the past few years, and more so this year than ever before, there are many pushback comments. There are comments, for example, on the Facebook page when the mayor that announced that he would be, I believe Grovetown was the name of the town, that he would be locking everyone, all sex offenders, up on Halloween night. And the comments were so many, and a great many of them were, good for you, Mr. Mayor, keeping our city safe, keeping our kids safe. But then there were a highly significant number saying, wait a minute, first of all, is this legal? Secondly, isn't this stupid? What good does this do? So there is pushback, but overall it is favored by parents, it's favored by the public, and it makes good press, it makes good headlines, it makes them look good.
So one other question, and then I'd ask you to drop back in periodically because we're having a turnover of audiences, people are coming in and out, so hopefully you can come back before the night's over. But in addition to what we've worked on in Georgia with the two counties, didn't we discover a municipality in the Great Lone Star State of Texas that's doing the same thing today? And what is the name of that city?
The name of that city is Edinburg, Texas. I did not take note of what county it's in, although it's not a countywide thing.
It's yes, a
back
city.
In May of this year, Edinburg passed a law allowing them to place under house arrest for the hours of Thanksgiving evening everyone on the registry, and to require that their homes have the signs put on them. So that's taking place right now in Edinburg.
And so at least when you compare that with what's going on in Georgia, they have an ordinance, so they have some authority. It would probably be a good chance it could be stricken with a legal challenge, but at least they have something. They can say, I put my hand on that Bible, and I said I was going to do my job, and this statute passed by the city council, which was elected by the people of this city, wanted this. But just FYI, the Texas Voices and their legal team is looking at that. I think they just became aware of it the same time we did, right? Today.
Right, which was today. There was no publicity about it until today because I've been monitoring everything every single day on a 24-hour basis. And there has, I don't mean I've been doing it for 24 hours, but I go back every morning for the past 24 hours. Today was the first time that this came out. And actually, it came to the attention of Texas Boises by someone who lives in either in the county or in the area and became aware of it. And then I did find an article that had just been put out. But yes, they, you know, at the 11th hour, you can't really do anything significant, but they are definitely, it's on their radar now, and Texas Voices and their legal team will be working on this.
So, well, Sandy, thank you for dropping in, and feel free to come back as the evening goes
on. I will do
along.
That. Now I've got to go feed my little puppies. They're a dinner.
And I know you've been overwhelmed. This has been the most voluminous amount of press response we've ever had, and it's a good thing.
It definitely has. But I will be back a little bit later. And thank you, Larry.
So, all righty. So we've generated at least a discussion about this. So, and now I'm going to go to the state of Illinois. We've got Scott.
Hello, this is Scott. Well, I've got two things for you tonight. First of all, I'm just going to briefly comment on the state law and how it impacts people here. And then I'm going to just tell you a brief story about something that happened to me today. It's sort of related to Halloween, more so just a practice that occurs around Halloween. But so first off, here's an excerpt from the vague Illinois statute that is has to do with Halloween that's currently being challenged due to its vagueness in a federal court action. The statute reads, "It is unlawful for a child sex offender to participate in a holiday event involving children under 18 years of age, including but not limited to," there's that vague language, "distributing candy or other items to children on Halloween, wearing a Santa Claus costume on or preceding Christmas, being employed as a department store Santa Claus, or wearing an Easter Bunny costume on or preceding Easter." The statute goes on to say, but it doesn't apply to a child sex offender who is a parent or guardian of children under 18 that are present in the home and other non-familial minors are not present. So, yeah, you can participate in holidays with your own children, but you can't participate in holidays with other people's children. So, needless to say, I do not hand out candy on Halloween. What's interesting is, my wife does. I'm actually at home right now, and we don't. Our porch lights aren't yet on, but when children come to the door, and they do come to the door, usually the parents accompany them, or they're on the sidewalk when the child comes up to the door, and they come to the door, ring it, and my wife answers it, and she gives them their candy. Haven't had a problem with that. I don't have any decorations out, but I have to say that, you know, around the state, there's some people who aren't on probation or parole are still afraid to participate in any way, you know, meaning, you know, put out decorations. You know, they're scared. And the most common question I get from parents who are on the registry, they ask me, can I take my own child trick-or-treating? And the answer is, well, maybe, but maybe not, because the law is vague, and what constitutes participation is really in the eyes of the police who want to charge you with a crime. What I've heard from some registered parents is that they do take their children trick-or-treating. They don't dress up. They walk with them, and oftentimes they go to another town to do that trick-or-treating. So it still happens, but anyway, it's a vague law. So that's what I'm going to say about the statute. Okay, number two. Larry, you're still there?
Sure are. We're listening to your report.
Okay, here's number two. So today, I get a text from my wife. She says, the police were just here. I said, what happened? She said, they handed me this yellow slip. And it says, Illinois State Police Sex Offender Apprehension Squad. And the guy told me, if you don't call them, well, first of all, they were at my house last week, and the officer stuck his card in my door, and just in the jamb of my front door. And his card was there, but there was no note to call. It didn't say, call me. And I knew why he was here. The police here in Illinois, and probably in many states, use Halloween or the week before Halloween as an opportunity. That's the time of year they often do their residence verification checks. By state statute, every registering agency is required to do an annual verification. Some agencies do it more often than that. Some partner with other agencies to also do those verifications. And in Illinois, the registration is handled either by the county sheriff or the local police, depending on whose jurisdiction you live in. So what happens is they send someone out to your house. Well, in past years, what they would do is they'd come sometimes on the weekend, and I'd be out, doing my front yard, and I'd say, oh, hello, officer. Yep, I live here. Other times they'd come at 7:30 in the evening, and I'm home from work. Well, last 3 or 4 years, they've been coming to my door, and I'm not home. They come during the day. I'm at work. And so what happens ultimately, usually my wife answers the door. Well, and sometimes they'll say, can you have them call us? Well, this year they've taken a new tactic, and I think it's something that's being done. I think it's being promoted by the Illinois State Police. But what they do is they take this piece of paper. It's a yellow sheet of paper, bright yellow. And it says Illinois State Police Sex Offender Apprehension Squad. An officer from your local police department attempted to contact you today regarding your registration status. It is imperative you contact our office as soon as possible in order to avoid a possible Class 3 felony charge. And then it lists the name of the officer, the phone number, the date, and the time. Well, so I was scared, what did I do? I didn't know I was supposed to call this guy. And my wife said, well, he said you were supposed to call him, that he left a note. And I said, well, no, he didn't. He just put his card in my door, and I put his card in my wallet. And so I called the guy. I left him a message. The police officer called me back. And he said, oh, yeah, we're distributing these forms. He obviously got them from the state police. Apprehension squad? I said, this is harassment, is what I called it. Because first of all, this guy's not an apprehension squad. He's not part of the Illinois State Police. And I said, I never received any notice from you. All I did was find your card in my door last week. So he said, well, yeah, we're gonna start posting these on people's doors. Well, they chose Halloween to do it. And the horror for my wife was that she said, what if other people see it? So here it is. They're going to come out and post this yellow notice on my front door. Apprehension squad. I'm in trouble.
Welcome to what's going on all over the country, Scott. That's standard practice in a lot of states.
So that's what's happened to me today. So I've contacted some attorneys, and I've gotten some interest. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I'm just a recalcitrant person, but if the state statute doesn't require me to do something, I'm not inclined to do it. And when they leave those flyers, you could leave flyers until you exhaust every bit of inventory in your supplies, and you burn up every gallon of gasoline that you have a budget for. But I'm never going to call you because it's not required. and of course, now if you don't call them, I can tell you what's going to happen. I can tell you exactly what's going to happen, what we talked about earlier. If you don't call them, they're going to put you on a list of people to target to try to get an I got you on you. They're going to try to find a way to get you in violation.
Well, what I heard from a Chicago registrant, he said, they will come to your house 3 times. And if you do not respond to them, then they won't leave a message. If you're not there in the 3 different times they come to check on your whether you're living at that address, he told me, when you go to register, they will arrest you.
Well, and now, I can't tell you that you wouldn't do that, that they wouldn't do that. But what I can tell you is they have to prove that you don't live there. You don't have to prove you do. They're making the assertion.
Right.
The burden in America is that they have to prove that you are in noncompliance and that you are not living at the residence.
Yep. Exactly. I said to my wife, there's nothing in state statute that says I have to call them within 3 days.
Well, I'm just speaking for myself. Remember our disclaimer, we don't give legal advice here. But you could exhaust every bit of paper and every gallon of gas, and I will never, ever call you back because I'm not required to. But you got to be prepared to pay the price of what they're going to do. They're going to try to find a way to get you in noncompliance. And the list of things is so long of things that they can get you noncompliant on. If you want to fire somebody, union or no union, they can usually fire you because they can follow you and they can eventually find you in noncompliance. If you're on probation, they're eventually going to find some violation of some significance. It may be a petty one, but they're going to find a violation. But if you're going to play this game with them, they're going to look for a way to get you in noncompliance and get you in court. But it's like the person that took the sign down. There'd be nothing. You have to cite when you swear out a criminal complaint, you have to cite to something. You have to say, according to this statute, according to this ordinance, they did this or they failed to do that. And if you put they refused to post a sign, the prosecutor is supposed to look at that and say, well, where does it say that they have to post that sign? What statute are we going to ask the court to find them guilty of? Well, we don't have one, Your Honor.
Well, regardless of their tactic, you know, what I mean to point out is that this is really close to police harassment.
Call it the notice.
The words on the notice. Yeah, it's police harassment.
It's police harassment.
They do the same thing here, Scott. They've become very aggressive about it statewide. And I had an instance not too many months ago where the flyer that they left had actually flown off the door. I wasn't here. I was in New York. So when I finally saw it, it was in the neighbor's yard, actually. And it was just by chance that I happened to see it there and picked it up. And I was really upset about it, and I contemplated and talked over with Paul whether I should call or not call. And, you know, he agreed with me that there is no obligation to call, but it's like Larry says, if you don't, then, you know, you open yourself up to all other, a range of other possible problems. But
I'm not suggesting I wouldn't call. If I got a notice from the police, but I'd call.
But you shouldn't have to. I mean, the fact of the matter is, imagine that you were not a sex offender. Imagine that you were not a registered citizen, and some, you know, deputy blowhard put a card or a note on your door saying, please call us. And if you don't call us, there'll be possibly criminal consequences. What other American citizen would ever put up with that, without going straight to the media and saying, can you believe what this dumb son of a has actually expected me to do? We put up with
I had to ask him, is this a prank?
That's Scott, legitimate concern these days.
Scott, I'm glad you guys are seeking legal advice, because I don't believe that what they will argue is that they're going to say the longstanding community caretaker doctrine. They're going to pull that out and say, well, yeah, it doesn't say in the statute that we're required to do it. But as the statutorily, we're the agency that's charged with carrying out registration, and we are doing this to care for the community and keep them safe. It's kind of like when they go out, when you call somebody and say, my grandma hadn't answered the phone for 3 days. They don't have any authority to go in your house, but they go knock at the door and ask, is grandma okay? And can we come in and look around to see that, you know, that they're not in distress because of the community caretaker? That's what they're going to argue. I don't know if it's going to work or not, but that's what they're going to say.
Well, you know, it would be okay with it if it said local police department. It wasn't a yellow, it was placed in my mailbox or was mailed to me, and it said local, from your local police department. And I opened the mail and I can read the letter. And you know what? If I don't respond within a day or so, feel free to email me or call me, because you know what? You have my email address. And I said, if you ever had a problem, please call my phone number, or you have my cell number. I said, or email me. You have my email address.
So, Scott, thank you. And come back and give us another report.
You're welcome.
If you have anything, and I wish you guys the best. You've got tons of litigation. We need to have a Illinois report one of these days. All right, Scott, thank you. All right. I'm going to do something impromptu here, and the person may not want to talk, but we're not going to give any names. But I've got a person in the land of enchantment, state of New Mexico, who will remain nameless. But area code 505, you were related to a person under supervision in the state of New Mexico. Can you relate to any of the stuff we're talking about tonight, or do you wish to speak to us about this? What was your experience? Did you experience a Halloween? I don't think the person does want to talk, or either that person's away from their phone. Okay, well, because I know that we're pretty bad here.
And okay. Hello.
Yes. Did you want to? Did you live through a Halloween experience here in New Mexico under the probation program?
Well, I guess. I'll just say that no. That was not under the time period that my boyfriend was living with me. But I would say that one of the most obnoxious things that I had to deal with was before I could officially be related to him, or be boyfriend and girlfriend, we had to go through the process of vetting me through either the probation officer or the treatment provider. It was kind of obnoxious, where I had to, give my history, make sure there's no minors living in my house, be able to recite the details of the crime, and before I would be able to be, allowed to see him. So I had to be approved. I don't know if that's standard.
It is. It said, did you ever see the behavioral contract that things like 12 pages of rules that they have, a special contract that they have for people?
Yes.
Okay. Well, did you notice all the things in there? You can't rent a hotel room. You can't do all these things that are normal in life. Yeah. You can't. If you will not do this, you will not do that. And when I tell people that you have to have your boyfriend or your girlfriend vetted, they look at me like I'm making this stuff up. It described the vetting one more time. You had to go through the treatment provider and the PO, correct?
Right. The PO didn't quite have a lot of time, so the first avenue was to go through the treatment provider. And I sat with the treatment provider and I had to go through the details of the crime, so she knew that I understood what the crime was. And then also, who I am, what do I do? Do I have any minor children? Everything like that. That was interesting. It was actually beneficial to me because it did open my eyes to some of the harassment that goes on. And before I talked to her, I wasn't aware of how registrants were treated. On supervision or not on supervision. So,
I'm going to take the liberty of giving an answer to you. You also listen to the Registry Matters podcast that we haven't promoted yet, which we will before this is over, but we received a question and I have an answer for that question. I can give you live now. You don't have to wait till the next podcast. The requirements, the requirements for there has to be at least 90 days remaining on supervision before you're eligible. And from what was described to me, there will be more than 90 days. So there will be eligibility for compact transfer. I would encourage that person to get their social worker to apply as soon as they possibly can. If that state, and I don't want to name too much here to make it obvious who we're talking about, but if that state has any type of reintegration system or any reentry assistance in terms of helping people reenter, then they would make the application while he's in custody, and it would be sent to this state, and they would do their same check all over again the first time. But he is eligible. My hunch is, with not much more than 90 days, that they probably are going to do everything they can to deflect it. But we don't know that, so I would encourage him to apply.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's good. I was afraid for the 90 days, so it's 90 days. Is the minimum amount that somebody would be able to apply for. Okay.
He will be eligible, because I think you said he has 120 or so days of supervision. So he will
that's correct.
He will be eligible. And folks, Andy, we're running up on the break at the top of the hour, where we're going to take another break and come back. So we could plug the podcast if you like,
sure.
It won't take very long.
No, it won't. But there are promos coming up on the next spot. Yeah, there's one coming.
Okay. Well, then we don't have to do that. Well, we'll just tell everybody that we can do some small chat here because if we take another call, it's going to be too long. We do have 3 more hours of this special edition of NARSL in Action Halloween Marathon. And as those of you who didn't sign up, you wouldn't have got the schedule, but we do have 3 more hours. We're going to have Janice Bellucci and Paul Dubling coming up later.
Paul Rigney.
Boy, I tell you, it's bad. Paul, and we're going to have King Alexander, who's in the final hour. Janice and Paul Rigney will be in the fourth hour. And King Alexander will be in the fifth and final hour. And the next hour is going to be largely open lines for just anything goes and breaking news. And whatever you want to talk about, as Rush Limbaugh says, it's going to be open line Halloween for the next hour. So, and Robin, did you have anything that you wanted to mention before we go to break?
No, I'm good. I think things are going very well here. Andy, thank you. And congratulations so far. Steady as she goes.
Yeah, it's working well tonight.
Yeah, if we could get through 3 more hours of this. Well, those of you who have joined us, we sent out the incorrect telephone number. That one was on me. And I sent out area code 727. Anybody who texted 727, you're going to get absolutely nowhere with that because that's not the right number. If you want to enter the drawing, you need to text 747. 227-4475 and put prize.
No, you got it wrong. 747-227-4477.
That's what I'm saying.
You said 5.
Okay. All right. If you say so. All right. 227-4477.
Yes.
And you're gonna win a $100 gift card or registration to the 2019.
I don't know. It's starting to sound like Larry wants to keep these prizes for himself.
So I don't hear my favorite music. What's wrong with our production?
Telling us it's a civil regulation.
Oh, I didn't have it playing out to everybody.
Telling us it's just there for the health and welfare of the community. It is punishment, pure and simple.
In a world where citizens are registered, their very existence is hated. The laws against them are unconstitutional. We have the Registry Matters Podcast, an in-depth look into the laws surrounding the registry. Visit registrymatters.co or search Registry Matters in your podcast app.
Let me underscore that one of the worst fears that people have about sex offenses, that the people who commit them will not stop. All the research says that's not true. Here's my key point. People who are arrested for a sex offense are less likely to be rearrested than any other type of offender. Decades of research shows us this fact. Recidivism is a non-issue. It's confusing to talk about, but it's the exact opposite of what the Supreme Court claimed.
Hi, this is Brenda Jones, NARSL Executive Director. If you're hearing this, you know just how important our work is to citizens across this country who struggle daily with the challenges of being on a public registry. You know what it means to wear that scarlet letter or to have a loved one wearing it. NARSL is fighting for the rights of millions of registrants, their family members, and their children to live free of excessive repressive laws that keep on punishing long after their sentences are over. We are filing lawsuits challenging restrictions, and our volunteers are fighting in state capitals, not only to prevent new bad laws, but also to introduce positive change. We need you to continue our work. Have you joined us yet? Made a contribution? Go to narsol.org today, that's narsol.org, and click on Join or Donate. Do it today before you forget. Become a part of NARSL's fight for your rights.
Please keep in mind, responses provided on the program are merely intended to offer guidance and should not be construed as legal advice. We cannot cover the specifics of any individual situation sufficiently to know what the most prudent course of action is. So NARSL advises all participants to consult with an attorney in their jurisdiction to determine the best course of action.